I love having the choir behind me. I think maybe some of the talent will rub off one of these days, so that's a good thing. Thank you, choir. I have a little cheat sheet on a pronunciation here, so that's what I'm hoping. There's a story about a man whose name was Karol Joseph Wojtyla. I probably messed up the Polish there, but at any rate. And he told the story that often he would wake in the middle of the night with a problem so consuming that he just could not sleep. And when he did that, he learned that all he had to do was say to himself, "Tomorrow, I'm going to present this problem to the Pope, and he will give me all the assurance and all the wisdom and all the faith I need to navigate the challenge." And that worked perfectly, and he went back to sleep and slept the whole night through. But then the next morning, he would wake up and realize, "Oh no, I am the Pope." I love that story. So as we begin our lesson today on the power of life, I'm going to ask you to complete some I am statements. And you should find in your bulletin a little piece of paper. It's a little smaller than I intended, but we'll work with it. A little piece of paper that has five numbers on it. And I would like for you to complete those with five I am statements. I am blank. If you need a pen, ushers have them, so raise your hand and we'll get pens out to you or some kind of a writing utensil. So, and then when you're finished, if you'd look up so that I can see that everybody's ready to go on. Yes, Mary has them. Sorry about that. They were small enough to fall out, I fear. I am. And I am. And by the way, you will not have to share these with anybody. These are for you. You can use the back if you want to write more. When you're finished, just put it aside and we'll refer back to it later. Anybody need more time? Okay. Yes, the ushers need more time. They've been passing out pens. Okay, I think I'm going to go on, and Mary and Roy, I'll give you a chance to not listen for a few minutes, okay? How's that? All right. Isn't it interesting that sometimes when things go wrong in our lives or things show up that we don't feel like we've chosen, the way we handle it sometimes, some people say, "Well, that's life," as if life were a bad thing, as if it were a negative thing. So today we're going to think about life, and we're going to discuss what is the meaning of life, and how do we use it for greater good? Do you think that topic might be a little broad to cover in 20 minutes? Well, we're going to try it, okay? Many think of life as a beginning with birth and ending in what we call death, as if there were two bookends of our existence. Yet in a larger sense, we know, all of us know, that that isn't really so. As spiritual beings, our lives are eternal. Poet laureate James Dillett Freeman wrote, "Life is not an alternation of life and non-life. There is only life. The truth is we cannot die, for we are life. Life is energy. Life is expression. It cannot cease to be because it is ceaseless. We may change form, but we cannot cease to be, not even for a moment. We cannot be separated from life. We cannot be less than life. And we know that even when a loved one makes his or her transition, that person lives on not only at a soul level, but also in our hearts and memories. The love we share is as eternal as its author. And beyond this passage we call death, the power of life keeps us eternally connected. And there's a quote that I love by Rossiter Raymond, which says, "Life is eternal and love is immortal. Death is only a transition, a horizon, nothing save the limit of our sight." So first of all, life is eternal. And secondly, life is a divine idea and the focus of so much of Jesus' teachings. On one occasion, in Luke 18, verses 18 to 19, a certain ruler asked Jesus, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus says to him, slightly different translation here, but Jesus says to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but God alone." Now, taking this exchange literally, it almost seems like Jesus is dodging the question, doesn't it? Seems like he doesn't really answer the question. And yet, Bible scholar Ed Townley says, perhaps Jesus intends here to remind us that we need no intermediary between us and the power of God. We are the power of God. And eternal life, metaphysically, is the full realization of the Christ presence. Have you ever heard people say, all of us want to go to heaven, but none of us want to die? Well, Jesus told us that's possible because he told us again and again that the Christ presence, the kingdom of heaven, is within us right now and throughout all eternity. Life is a spiritual principle, a quality of the divine, pure, perfect, and never ending. And also, life is one of our 12 spiritual powers. It is a power that really expresses as the light of life, as animation, vitality, and a sense of presence. All of us, to some degree, have life, or we wouldn't be sitting in our seats here. But as Winifred Houseman writes in her book on the 12 powers, entitled Your God-Given Potential, only when we keep this power in alignment with our indwelling Christ can we reach our whole human potential, our full human potential. We are on this earth to experience life as an idea that enriches the soul and lifts the body into that perfect pattern that was really implanted in us from the beginning. In Unity, we like to say life is consciousness. Actually, we stole that from Emmett Fox. He was the first to coin that. But life is consciousness, and that means life is an awareness of being. But in our human existence, we're aware of the world around our senses, aren't we? I mean, we all are. In one of my workshops last week, we were asked to make a daily joy list, recording our joyful moments, taste, smells, sounds, and touch experiences. And one that I quickly jotted down was that smell and taste of the first cup of coffee in the morning. I love that. And as wonderful as it is for us to enjoy all the sensory delights of this world, and we're intended to do so, surely there's more to us than enjoying a cup of coffee, right? And in a book, or actually in a talk called The Power of Life, Jim Rosmerge says, and I think this is a powerful thought, there is a whole cosmos within us. Life is consciousness, awareness of all the possibilities of God and all the potential within ourselves. We are not just aware of our surrounds, but of our oneness. This means oneness with God and all others. I know in human consciousness we can tend to see ourselves as separate, but truly we are not. We're all individualized expressions of the same power. And spiritually, we realize there's an interconnectedness to all of life. There's a saying in Las Vegas, you have to be present to win. And that's true in our lives also. In our lives, in order to live fully, we must be fully present to the Christ within. Charles Fillmore wrote, "The first step in the realization of life is to always know that God is life, abundant, omnipresent, eternal, and the second step is to make positive connections with God, life, by declaring the oneness with it." Actually, we struggle with language here. With isn't even the right preposition, but in it, through it. And if we are honest, in our human skins, like Pope John II, who was the Pope at the beginning of the talk, we forget aspects of our identity at times, don't we? We really do. We get busy and we're so consumed with all of the surround that we forget sometimes who we really are. So with this in mind, I'd like you to take out your to-do, your to-do list, your I am list. That was Freudian. Take out your I am list, okay? Now, the first time I did this in a professional activity, I wrote, "I'm a woman." And that was true enough at the time, but we have to ask ourselves, was that eternally true? I mean, at one point I was a baby, then a toddler, then a young girl, and I'm not going beyond that, okay? But the point is, things shift and change, don't they? So look at your list for a moment and just ask yourself how many of the I am statements that I wrote or thought about, if you didn't write, how many of them are eternally true, are true forever? Once I wrote, "I'm a staff development coordinator," but that wasn't who I was, that's not who I am. It was a title, a role, and one, by the way, which I no longer have. And I might write down, if I'm trying to stretch for something more eternal, I might write down, "I'm a student of unity." Others might write, "I'm a Christian, I'm a Methodist, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Jew." But as Paul wrote to the Galatians in chapter 3, verse 28, there is no longer Jew nor Greek, there is no longer slave nor free, there is no longer male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. This is what is eternally true. All the rest are roles that we play in this stage of existence. And we know in Exodus 3:14, we've looked at this many times, God tells Moses that the divine name is I Am. So it's those powerful words, I Am. And I Am, they say, are two of the most powerful words, for what you put after them shapes your reality. And how many of us say, "I am tired, I am sick, I am angry," and just think what we're not only taking on the wrong affirmation, we're really sort of defaming the name of God when we say that. So all this calls us, I believe, to discover some aspect of our being that is changeless, eternally true. What would you write? As I already said, I might write, "I'm a student of truth." I might write, "I'm a child of God." I might write, "I'm a spiritual being." Actually, once in a professional setting doing just exactly this activity, I did write down, "I'm a spiritual being," and had no idea that we were going to be called upon afterwards to share with a partner. So I'm telling you, in the professional setting, that wasn't the right answer. When I read, "I am a spiritual being," the woman who was my partner literally moved her chair as far away from me that was politely possible. And she didn't talk to me for the rest of the conference, you know. But you know what? We can't be bothered with that. But those were her issues. We have to deal with our own. So how many of you wrote down things like, and you don't really have to raise your hand, just kind of a rhetorical question. How many of you wrote down things like, "I am the light of the world"? How many of you wrote your new name, the quality that we all claim to be during our white stone ceremony? Remember that? By the way, a couple of you did. There are other white stones out on the table if any of you didn't get one, or if you want to do it again, you can find you can listen to the lesson online and redo it. And at this moment, I'm going to give you a couple seconds to feel free, if something comes to you, to add to your list. And I know we didn't leave any room on the bottom, so on the edge, make a big star and add something, if you haven't already done so, that is spiritually true about yourself, something that's eternally true and changeless. The thing is, We have all been culturally conditioned to believe that the meaning of life is outside of us. We look for meaning in things, possessions, a bigger house, a fancier car. And the meaning of life is none of these things, and none of them brings us fulfillment and happiness. George Bernard Shaw wrote, "There are two great disappointments in life. One is not getting what you want, and the other one is getting what you want." That's exactly right. We can't let anything on the outside define or limit us. And really, anytime we let other people define us, that is limiting us. We are here to live in the full consciousness of divine identity. Jim Rosemary shares this wonderful story about a woman who goes to the doctor in great pain with her right knee. And he examines her and looks at her and he says, "Well, I think it's nothing but old age. You're just aging." And she looked at him and she looked at her knee and she looked him right in the eye and she said, "That can't possibly be it, because my left knee is just as old as my right and it doesn't hurt a bit." I love that story because it shows us we have to stop accepting negative ideas about ourselves from other people, because we have to let go of that in order to embrace our oneness and our wholeness. And our Missouri philosopher, Mark Twain, said, "The two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why you were born." And on the walls of an ancient temple in Babylon, they found a relief that shows a king who forged his crown into chains. And right next to him, there's a picture of a slave who forged his chains into a crown. And beneath the relief, it reads, "Life is what one makes of it, no matter of what it is made." Powerful. We must all determine the meaning of our lives individually. Who and what are we? What have we come here to be, and what have we come here to do? Now, if we were able to pose those questions to Jesus today, what do you think he would say? Well, actually, he already said it. He told Pilate, and this is a slightly different translation, but he told Pilate, "To this end I was born, to bear witness to the truth." Jesus came to express his fullness of being, to realize his potential, and he taught us to do exactly the same. He said in John 14:1, "Very truly I tell you, whoever believes in me," metaphysically, whoever believes in the Christ presence, "will do all the works that I do, and greater works than these shall you do." And so when we dwell in this Christ consciousness, we understand that wholeness is our essence. That's who we are. It doesn't matter what our physical bodies are manifesting or what's showing up on the outer world. Wholeness is our essence. And when we align our thoughts and our intentions and our actions with greater good, we find success in all that we do. We find success in the outer. How many of you have ever heard of Samuel Pierpont Langley? Anybody ever heard of him? Looks pretty important, though, doesn't he? Well, he was actually a Harvard graduate, secretary of the Smithsonian Institution. He was an American astronomer, physicist, and a pioneer in aviation. And yet, we have never heard of him. Actually, in the late 1800s, Langley was able to convince the War Department, now the Department of Defense, but the War Department then, to contribute $50,000 to his project of a manned space flight. It was a lot of money in the late 1800s. And after several failures, the War Department finally stopped financing him. They withdrew his funds. And one U.S. representative said, "The only thing Langley ever made fly was government money." Actually, 8 days after Langley's last failure, at Kitty Hawk, the Wright brothers flew a sturdy, well-designed craft manned by Orville and built for around $1,000. And in a TED talk, one other thing. The interesting thing is, the minute Langley heard about the Wright brothers' success, he quit. He quit all his research. After 18 years, he gave up any future improvements in flight because he had not been the first. Isn't that interesting? Instead of building on what the Wright brothers had proven and taking it farther. So in a TED Talk entitled The Power of Why, Simon Sinek says, the Wright brothers, the difference is the Wright brothers were motivated by a cause. They had a purpose. They believed flight was possible and it would change the world. In contrast, according to Sinek anyway, Langley's purpose was to become rich and famous. That's all he wanted to do. He was motivated by a result. And by the way, in 1906, just 3 years after the Wright brothers' success, Langley had a series of strokes and died a broken and disillusioned man. And so I think this shows us that, according to Muhammad Ali, impossible is just a big word thrown around by small minds who find it easier to live in a world they have been given than to explore the power to change it. Impossible is not a fact, it's an opinion. Impossible is not a declaration, it's a dare. Impossible is potential. Impossible is temporary. Impossible is nothing. End of quote. And our power of life is our power of possibility. And as we said a couple of weeks ago, Lent is a time for spiritual rebirth and renewal, a time of aligning ourselves with the Christ presence. And during Lent, we might choose to fast from, to give up, to forego any negative attitudes that just keep us mired in a sense of separation from God. And how many of you have already discovered the little 2017 Uni Lent booklet, Be Ye Transformed? Do you have it? It's free. You can download it online. You can put in your address online. It'll be sent to you immediately. And it's a great little Lenten booklet. And we know that Bible scholar Ed Townley writes, he has an article in the second, it's the second article of the booklet. And he writes, in these words, let me get them on the screen. In these words, the Apostle Paul encapsulates the entirety of the spiritual truth behind the early ministry of Jesus Christ. It is, wake up, our daily word, awaken, wake up, shake off the dream of limitation and duality, and reclaim your true identity as beings of spirit. The power of life brings us unlimited potential. Yet I've heard people say, I have no unique gifts or talents. There's nothing special about me. How many of us have thought that sometimes? Don't raise your hand. But anyway, how many of us have? You don't have to reveal that. I'll admit that I have. The truth is that every single one of us is an individualized expression of the divine. Made in the image and likeness of God, we are empowered with great gifts, remarkable gifts. And this Lenten season is the perfect time for us to clear away any thoughts of less than. If anyone in our lives has ever told us we are worthless, powerless, or without talent, they were wrong. The old Unity way was cancel, cancel. Don't take it in. Don't let those ideas live rent-free in your head. Lent is the celebration of waking up, just as the world is waking up after winter. Ask yourself, what have I come here to be? Why am I here? And pray and meditate about that, and then live your life in the highest possible state of consciousness. In the eternal now, right here, fulfill your divine potential. Claim your eternal I am identity. Claim your oneness. Claim your wholeness. Claim your power. That's life. Accept this treasured gift and make this beautiful spring season a natural time to grow and live on purpose, in purpose. Celebrate life. And so it is. And now let's just take a moment to affirm the nature of our God with whom we are one. Together, the light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well.